kind of a rote way of thinking, and this is asking us to just be a little bit mindful in terms of what we say. Of course, lastly is to challenge remarks or jokes that are harmful, even if they come from other queer people. Interrupting those behaviors can really be the difference. I always think of that saying, you know, death by a million mosquito bites, and that those tiny little microaggressions that we might not think anything of in their singularity, but they do add up. And, you know, for people who do feel persecuted because of their identities or their belief systems or whatever else they might feel that way, those can really add up in ways that are unfathomable, I think, for us who get around fairly well in the world as a privilege. You're listening to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, campus and community radio from Simon Fraser University, where we do broadcast on the ancestral territories of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. And I am your host, Robin, for this hour. Yes, we were talking about Trans Day of Remembrance and Resilience. I liked that when I saw it too, because it really had this this we're still here about us. I think sometimes there's a danger, though, in using the term resilience, because then, you know, we have to feel like we've got to be sort of strong and fighting all the time, and we shouldn't have to be strong and fighting really about anything at all. It kind of, you know, pits us against the upstream battle that we often feel we're in if we're trying to change something and just live our best lives. So yes to resilience, but also it would be a great place if we didn't have to be so darn resilient about everything all the bloody time, right? All right. Well, let's have another song from the playlist here. Again, this is from the album Celebrating Women in Music, Lilith Fair, Volume 1. And these folks call themselves the Wild Colonials, which I think is kind of wonderful and charming and funny. And the song that we're going to have a listen to is called Charm here on Intravenous.
You can't be anything but
Wild Colonials with Charm there on Intravenous. I want to read to you the parable of Eden's lost heroine, Revisioning Lilith. It's a short-ish little parable from The Holy Wild, A Heathen Bible for Untamed Women by Daniel Dulski. I've been indulging in it over the past little while. I started it a while ago and have been revisiting it lately because it kind of dropped off. But this struck me this morning as I was reading, and just, you know, in that in that striving for sovereignty and to let go of the ideas that we have that you know can keep us safe, but also where we know and fully appreciate that we're not living ourselves. And I really liked how this parable puts it into context in terms of some of this stuff. For all her wisdom, Lilith could not understand why this precious garden, this manicured and flawless landscape that once dazzled her with its fairy tale beauty, now appeared so fake and fragile. She was sure the brilliant green grasses were painted and artificial, and the flowers were paper and scentless. How had she not noticed this ruse before now? She knelt at the knotted base of the tree of knowledge, the only tree in the garden that smelled of primal bark, blessed bitter leaves and dirty roots, the only growing thing she was sure was absolutely real here in this carved-up land. She drank in the heady, earthy scent and caressed the bark, suddenly starved for untamed nature and uncultivated ground. She yearned so deeply for far-reaching trees and soft-bodied creatures. She was homesick for a wild place she had never seen. She knew it existed. She glimpsed this many-colored wilderness in her dreams, but her conscious mind did not know the way. Each morning, she woke and wept in the underworld garden, suffocating under the weight of a life she never chose, and hungry for the hearty sustenance of the feminine divine. Pressing her face to the bark, Lilith whisper prayed to a mother goddess for salvation. Bless me, mother, for I will most certainly sin against this too small life. I yearn so much for a freedom I know I deserve that my belly burns with the wanting. My blood is raging under my skin, willing me forward, and yet I do not know which path to take. I dream of a blood-red road, but I know not how to find it. Mother, show me the way out. I will die if I must stay here. If I must waste more of my precious life among mere fabrications of what I love, if I must obey rules I did not write, spending my days conforming to someone else's notion of perfection, I am consumed by an ache I have no name for, and all I know is that I must leave before this sickness of desire ends me. So consumed with anguish this wild one was, so certain of her belonging to a wildness she had never seen, that she failed to notice when a snake slid up her back and coiled around her neck. So broken was she, so blinded by a dark and demanding restlessness, that Lilith did not see the gift of the forbidden fruit when it fell to the ground. She did not see it with her eyes, but she felt it in her blood. There was a certain ecstatic electricity buzzing from beneath the apple's red skin that crooned to her like a warm maternal lullaby to a shivering orphan. The snake continued spiraling around her neck, and Lilith wiped her tears. This soul food was not fit for feminine consumption, she had been warned. She was breaking one of the rules of this place by simply being here. To eat from the tree of knowledge was to know too much, to commit an egregious sin against a wrathful god. But the snake's cool scales were reassuring. She did not look over her shoulder to see whether she was being watched. In that moment, she cared little for what laws had tried to contain her. She hoped quite fervently that she would be seen as she wrapped her shaking fingers around the apple. Heaven help her. She hoped some vengeful deity was looking down as she sank her teeth deep into pure, sweet passion. She was defiant in the face of her continued captivity, a rebel heathen who was no longer content to stay in this unholy Eden. In this moment, Lilith would risk it all, everything she knew herself to be, just to taste the holy wild. "Yes, my serpentine sister," Lilith hissed, "I beg you forgive the fear that kept my lips from this righteous fruit for so long, that keeps me tethered to a garden of lies out of a bone-deep resistance to loneliness. They called me evil, and I believed them. They promised salvation from my sinfulness, and I waited for redemption. All the while, the skeleton key that could unlock every vine-wrapped cage, the sharp blade that could slice through these thin-growing binds of mine, was blooming and bearing beauteous fruit. This one small meal was Lilith's instantaneous descent into the red realm of soul, a particular and empowered individuality entirely her own. Every time the gritty marrow of the fruit touched her tongue, she caught a glimpse of her destiny. With every hearty swallow, she saw the rainbow shades of her liberated life. This garden hell, this too small life, was now completely colorless, devoid of fiery purpose and sensual majesty, but she had not realized it until this moment. Never before had she so clearly known the way out of this lifeless cage, and, sucking the juice from the core, Lilith vowed to seek out a wilder home. She stood in her own power for the first time since she had been brought to this place, and she howled into the depths of the garden, calling any other living creature to join her in her escape. Uncoiling her scaled companion and looking it square in its black diamond eyes, Lilith offered the creature heartfelt gratitude and a bone-deep affirmation. "Thank you. We don't belong here." Spreading her black wings wide, Lilith kissed the tree of knowledge before taking to the ever-spiraling red road, the escape route that had been there for her all along, the homeward pathward to the wilds. That's an excerpt from The Holy Wild, a heathen Bible for the untamed woman, and the parable of Eden's lost heroine, revisioning Lilith, which I thought in today's discussion was kind of pertinent to the fact that, you know, when we talk about our identity, not only as women, but as expanding into other genders and you know, exploring what that non-binary territory is, and queering this idea of gender as we know it, is something that keeps us or calls to us, I guess, more so to leave this too small life behind, right? And this too small life of the artificial flowers and that environment that is maybe safe and secure, but also scentless and without real passion and grit, and definitely without any kind of sovereignty for standing in our own power. It's a very dictated place, right? This garden that we live in. And that I think there's a lot of there's a lot of Lilith as sort of a figure, a historical figure, a mythical figure that we can look towards to give us strength and encouragement, I guess, to have that level of resilience that I spoke about just earlier, where I wasn't sure if I liked that term quite, but you know, she, in eating the apple and you know, biting into the fruit of knowledge, it does give her a certain sense of resilience that she may have not known before, that moment, right, where she's able to step into something that is more resilient to the things that she can recognize are outside of herself, and become more determined to achieve the path that she calls the red road, or the red path to the soul. There's all kinds of literature also where Lilith is a figure that is pointed to, spoken about in terms of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender rights and liberation, because of her not saying explicitly, right, but because of her queering of the ways of colonial thinking that we've all been indoctrinated to live by, you know, and anything that takes us out of these ideas and these ideals, values, belief systems that we have, not only about ourselves, but about where we fit into the wider and broader world, I think helps us to decolonize our minds. And that is ultimately a queering of things, right? It's a turning things on their head and looking at things through a different lens, which ultimately is the healthy path forward. So I wanted to sort of try to glom those two ideas together for this morning's show. I hope that I gave you a little bit of a taste of how these things are working a little bit in my mind, how we can sort of stretch beyond what is the representation of the norm, what we see and what we're told is quote unquote normal, is very much cultivated and artificial and scentless. It might look like a pretty flower, but it doesn't smell like a rose. And these things that we buy into, we can also buy out of. And so that's the little piece of inspiration that I will leave you with today. I'll post up some of these links on the show page for the archive of the program today, so that you can follow up if you do like. And I think we're going to hear one last song from this Lilith Fair record. Recording, Celebration of Women in Music, Volume 1. And this is a song from Auteur de Lucy. And I will, well, I won't see you next week because it's the STEM podcast. But the week after, we'll be back with something new on Intravenous. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
지나쳐 떠나